like to thank you all for coming to this party that my wife organized.
Sherry and Dwight Tobin have worked their way to the top.
For a few years, I was a little bit envious. I thought, well, that I'd like to have some of those nice things, too. Success.
After 32 years of marriage and success, the pair is stronger than ever.
They've had lots of people that just love and adore them both.
But this American dream will turn into a gruesome nightmare.
There was something in her voice that said, there's something wrong.
The legs were separate from the torso, and the arms were separate from the torso. There's remains that have never been recovered.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. Dwight and Sherry Tobin have loved each other for as long as they can remember. They grew up across the road from each other in small town Clay City, Kansas. Dwight on a farm, and Sherry, the daughter of the owner of a local propane business.
They were well aware of each other for a long time, from a very early age. She was a cute blonde girl, slightly chubby and short, but very cute nonetheless.
They kind of caught each other's eyes, and she would kind of come to the edge of the street, jump on the tractor with him, and kind of ride around.
In college, Dwight finally gets the nerve to ask out his longtime crush, Sherry, who's now a high school senior. They discover they share the same ambition, to make it big. Dwight and Sherry tie the knot in the summer of 1975. And just 3 short years later, the young couple heads to the city of Salina, Kansas, to pursue their dreams.
They really sought out getting out of that little town that they were in, and it was going to be them against the world. It was going to be whatever they wanted, however they wanted, and they were going to make it happen. They weren't afraid of it. I'd say my mom was timid. She was scared. But she knew if she had my dad, they could conquer anything. She knew that that was kind of her ticket in some way.
They settle comfortably in their rented townhouse, ready to take on the world. Dwight begins his studies in animal science at the University of Kansas, while Sherry takes care of the household.
Dwight was a very determined man. He wanted to have the best, not only for himself, but for everybody that was around him.
He always wanted to succeed, and he worked hard to do it.
Forensic psychiatrist Brian Russell and psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser believe that the Tobins have a shot at making their dreams come true.
Sherry sees a lot of potential in Dwight. He's a hard worker, he's focused, and she thinks that she'll be able to have the life she wants. And Sherry is like the perfect cheerleader support system girl. She's the one who's gonna stick by him and root for him and support him during his success.
Dwight and Sherry both seem to want a lot out of life. But one of the things that we see is that Dwight is the one whose work is going to make the dreams happen. The maximum pressure, I think, is on Dwight to achieve both people's dreams.
Sherry is especially happy to put some distance between her and small town Kansas.
My dad always jokingly called himself the farm boy. And, you know, she didn't, I don't think she particularly liked that. She didn't want anything to do with that farm. You know, nothing. She probably wouldn't want to be shoveling, you know, manure or feeding, you know, cows or, you know, or rounding up horses or, that wasn't her.
She didn't like dirt. She liked everything very clean.
Mom was definitely the epitome of a neat freak and, you know, made sure things were clean.
She was an excessive bleach user. She cleaned excessively with just straight bleach.
With the arrival of their daughter, Jennifer, in 1977, and their son, Brett, 3 years later, the couple struggle to make ends meet, especially with Dwight still in school.
Get a couple of answers on this phone. Who are you calling?
Sherry was working as a part-time call center type person in a hospital to help make some of the ends meet. I know Dwight was doing whatever he had to do to make, you know, the money, and kind of was trying to do what he could do to be the man of the family.
Increasingly desperate to bring in some cash, Dwight tries his hand trading stocks. He gambles most of their meager family income on the stock market. It's a big risk that ends in disaster.
Dwight, how could you be so stupid?
Well, he made some bad decisions there, and they suffered immensely with money. And so it was very hard for him and very hard for my mom at that time. Pretty much lost everything at that point, too. They lost our home. I remember living with my grandparents.
You were supposed to take care of me.
Sherry, I'm gonna fix it!
And to add to their stress, Sherry is pregnant with their third child, Allison.
You better fix it!
The family buckles under the pressure.
On top of that, there's been speculation that he was threatening to leave my mom at that time, too. It just wasn't a happy time for them. It was real tough on them.
Guys.
They had to make a change of, okay, what do we do next? Do we stay here? We can't rely on our folks. We have three kids to provide for. We gotta figure this out.
There's a real relationship bind here because Sherry has had her heart set on being, you know, wealthy, and that money is gone. And Dwight wanted to be the hero for her. Now he's looking at himself as a disappointment, and she's looking at him as a disappointment.
When a man feels that his wife feels that she's made a poor bet or that she's dissatisfied with the pace or the level at which her life is progressing because of him, that can be devastating.
Under pressure to save his marriage, Dwight makes another risky move.
I think she always wanted more. I think maybe they both always wanted more. You know, more money is better.
The young Tobin family is on the verge of bankruptcy after Dwight bets everything they own on several failed stock trades. They are far from the life Sherry imagined for her family. And to add to their stress, Sherry has just given birth to their third child. Dwight makes another gamble. He decides to move his family to Denver so he can earn his MBA. He looks for a job at a bank to tide him over.
Dad landed the job in Denver, and then they really made some changes and said, hey, let's give everybody a fresh start, and us a fresh start, and the kids, and, you know, and everything about moving to Denver was right.
Sherry didn't feel the same way. She's less certain about leaving behind family and friends.
My mom struggled with that. She was leaving everything she ever knew.
In 1991, after graduating from business school, Dwight has a new plan.
My dad, you know, he never could sit still, so it was kind of like his wheels were turning of how could I make money.
A toast?
He launches a leasing firm called Tobin & Company. They provide lease-to-own deals for organizations like schools or fire stations that can't qualify for a mortgage with a bank.
He was the middleman. He set up the deal. He handled the funds transfer and so on. So basically for a small percent of the whole deal, and you know, some of these deals could be worth $1 million.
Within a few short years, business is booming. Dwight's business savvy is paying off, and they're soaring to new financial heights. For the first time since being on the brink of disaster, the family has finally arrived.
After he got that degree, life changed a lot. They built their first home, truly from the ground up, 3,000 square feet with a basement, you know, a dream home that, you know, anybody would love to have. We all had our own bedroom, you know, that was a huge thing.
The Tobins spare no expense on their children.
She would buy them whatever they needed, whatever they wanted, and however they wanted it, as soon as it came out of their mouth, it was there.
Here comes the first one, all right, you ready? Are you ready? Sure? Okay, good.
Dwight's new financial security allows him to spend a lot of quality time with the children.
He could set his own hours quite a bit, so it came in real handy. And Dwight coached a girls' softball team for a while, the one that his daughter was on, and then so they had to buy a large SUV to transport the softball team around.
When his kids shined, he was just on cloud nine. He was ecstatic. I mean, very proud parent.
Earning close to $500,000 a year, the Tobines revel in their newfound wealth. The family is overwhelmed with this spectacular change in fortune.
It was the perfect family of five.
The Tobines seem happier than ever.
It was a great example of what, you know, what I wanted to be like, what I wanted my marriage, what I wanted my future family to be like.
And we just, I think we should go right.
They don't just enjoy the money. They enjoy the status.
Thanks a lot for coming again, guys.
Thank you. The Tobines Leasing.
My theory on that, on with most people, is especially those that grew up without a lot, is kind of a validation of the world. Look at me, I made it. I'm really important now because I've got all this stuff.
Sherry liked a lot of the good things in life. The way it came across when I met her is that she always had that taste for one step up.
Sherry wants to play her part in shoring up the family's new position. She decides to get her real estate license in order to increase their income.
I think she always wanted more. I think maybe they both always wanted more. You know, more money is better.
Sherry is feeling a great deal of stress because she fears that the money is going to go away again. So part of what's starting to happen is she's trying to do everything that she can to gain control.
Another thing that happens sometimes is when one spouse supports the ambition of the other and the other becomes successful, the one who was sort of in the support role can sometimes want to share more of the credit.
I thought I told you about this a month ago.
The family believes that Sherry is pushing Dwight too hard.
She was kind of just, you know, making sure like things were done, double checking with them. Did you take care of this? Did you take care of that? And she was really on top of him. He'd get a little irritated and kind of just, you know, tell her to back off and, you know, let me do my business.
Sherry, can I take a minute of your time, please?
Others feel they are both equally compelled to achieve greater success and are pushing each other forward.
My sense was that he was driven himself. Now, she may have put pressure on him, but he was very driven and very competitive. I'd almost describe him as a little bit controlling, too. I mean, he was never in the military, but he acted like a drill sergeant once in a while.
Okay, good. Yes. I've got other things to take care of. I don't want to come back
please
and these aren't
and
done.
Do them.
I know he always seemed to be a little frustrated that she was not catching on to things as quickly as he thought. If it was paperwork, if it was taking care of something with a business, he always wanted her to do it and would get frustrated if she didn't do it and do it on time.
I've had many successful guys in business tell me over the years that at some point they felt like their wives and sometimes even their kids also saw them as just sort of ATM. Seems to me like those guys blame their relentless pursuit of financial success on the family when the real truth is that's probably more like the reason why that man and that woman found each other in the first place, because they shared that ambition.
The years go by, the kids leave home, and the couple grows old together. And after 28 years of marriage, Sherry has not lost any of her desire to make money. In 2003, Dwight is surprised when Sherry confesses that she's mismanaged one of her real estate accounts in order to accelerate a deal. Okay. Sherry has her real estate license revoked.
Yeah.
You know, I think she tried to kind of double dip on one end of the deal and double dip on the other end of the deal. I think she found ways of, hey, I don't have to do that, I can leave this out, or and then, you know, make the money quicker and faster. Now that we've got a taste of it, how do we keep that? You know, because they obviously both enjoyed it.
The Tobines love nothing more than a fresh start. And Dwight claims to see a great opportunity in Arizona real estate.
And the housing market there was booming here in Phoenix. So why not roll into an even bigger home, another bigger dream home?
Or maybe Dwight and Sherry just want to scrub clean their blemished reputation.
Actually, I have suspicions since then that she really wanted to get out of Denver because I think she'd burned some bridges in Denver with people, and this seemed like an opportunity to make a new start somewhere and where nobody knew her, and she could start over and impress people.
And that's exactly what they do, settling down in the exclusive gated community of Gilbert, Arizona. But the calm of their desert oasis is interrupted by a startling telephone call, a call that throws the entire marriage into chaos and fear.
He started getting calls from people asking him, how are you doing? I heard you were in the hospital.
By 2003, Sherry and Dwight Tobine are sunning themselves in the warm and exclusive neighborhood of Gilbert, Arizona. It seems like a good place to get away from the embarrassment of Sherry's real estate trouble.
To the success of the business.
And Dwight continues getting more work than he can handle.
I felt like they were at a higher peak than they were when they were in Denver. He always said he'd get her a dream car, and she always wanted a Blue Jay, and they got a Blue Jay.
They are the talk of their friends and family back home in Kansas.
It was a one-story, sprawling ranch. You know, you walk in, you saw their piano, you saw their formal dining room with a huge backyard.
Dwight is enjoying a couple of extras himself.
He also started getting toys of ATVs and things like that.
For a few years, I was a little bit envious. I thought, well, I'd like to have some of those nice things too.
Naturally, they join the exclusive Seville Golf and Country Clubs, where they spend their days hobnobbing with Phoenix's elite.
She would just drop lines in casual conversation that she'd met some of her friends at the club and things like that, you know, just a little bit of name dropping.
Dwight, honey, I need you to sign this.
It's not all play. There's work to be done. But Sherry is getting nervous. She's worried that her go-getting husband has become a little complacent.
She'd do everything in her power to try to help him close the deal. And what do you need from me? Do you need me to take this, you know, to FedEx? Hey, do you need me to go pick that up? Or hey, you need this done? Or do you need that phone call made?
To appease his wife, Dwight lets her take over the lion's share of the paperwork.
He was kind of a big picture kind of a person. And he'd come up with the ideas and the big picture, and then he wants somebody else to work through the details and take care of it.
Dwight may also see her sort of needing her own thing, or needing to feel like she's somehow a contributor to the financial success of the family.
He's like, get her off my back. She's not working right now, and I don't want her in my business, my day-to-day business, so let her handle the finances. It'll keep her busy, and I can go and do my thing.
With Sherry taking a larger hand in Tobine and Company, it's running like clockwork.
And I thought they were pretty much raking it in. Like, he knew who we could get a quick deal from. He was willing and dealing and doing well.
But after 3 years of uninterrupted success with Sherry at the helm, Dwight, out of the blue, starts receiving alarming phone calls from clients. They're asking very strange questions.
I don't know where you get that. I'm fine. Listen, I'm just going off to golf. I'll be back.
He started getting calls from people asking him, how are you doing? I heard you were in the hospital. And he couldn't figure out what this was about.
Finally, he figures it out. His wife's been telling clients that he's seriously ill.
She was telling people that, you know, he was hurt, or he had a heart attack, and he's been in the hospital.
His wife has been lying to his clients. Yeah, but like, why?
Just can't find the
bewildered, place. Dwight takes a closer look at the company business. He discovers missing cash from several accounts, approximately $50,000.
He was pretty shook up, and he couldn't believe it. He was pretty disgusted.
Sherry?
Yes?
Stop that bull!
Dwight is furious. But Sherry tells him that she withdrew the money from the business to pay for family expenses.
Well, Sherry seems to be doing some externalization, and these are things that we see typically with people whose designs haven't worked out and who are now looking culpable in some way and trying to explain themselves.
But knowing the way Dwight is, part of what I'm thinking is that he's probably upset with himself, thinking, I should have been watching, I should have been paying attention. You know, Sherry's a good person, she's on my side, and maybe this was all sort of accidental.
Dwight was not paying attention, and he's about to realize the situation is worse than anyone imagined. One afternoon, the family receives a series of alarming messages from Sherry.
Sent us a random text messages that were like, I love you.
She hasn't been seen for hours, so Dwight searches the neighborhood.
He couldn't find her. He didn't know what was going on. He was trying to find her, and we were trying to find them.
Oh, my God. Sherry!
Dwight finds her unconscious at a neighbor's home, next to an empty bottle of pills.
She pretty much told him when they were in the ambulance what was going on and why she was going to kill herself because she couldn't handle it anymore. And she's done a lot of bad things. And, you know, the list went on and on and on.
I couldn't.
He got her to, you know, the hospital. They got her an ambulance and got her over there and pumped her stomach. And she was fine.
But their financial situation is not fine. Sherry confesses that they are in debt to the tune of over $1 million. Everything Dwight has spent years building up has come crashing down.
I remember sitting with him in the waiting room when all this was going down with my mom, and he's explaining all this to me. His head's down, and he's just had tears. Like, you know, like, how can this be? Like, you know, he was just numb. Like, I've built this empire. I've given her a dream. You know, how could it be just ending?
Dwight's entire concept of his life would have been shattered.
Dwight's whole focus, his entire life, has been his wife, his kids, and money. Everything he's worked at, everything he's tried to do and accomplished is ruined. I'm worried about how he's going to handle the situation and what he might do.
Dwight realizes they have no choice but to sell their house to pay their creditors. They leave their luxurious ranch behind and move into a rental in Scottsdale.
I've never seen him that down. I'd never seen my dad at that point, that low.
And when Dwight fails to show up for Thanksgiving dinner, the family worries that he might have sunk even lower.
It's more of just a surprise. Like, is this really happening?
Dwight Tobin's wife, Sherry, admits to draining their bank accounts. Over $1 million is missing. Everything he's worked for and earned over a lifetime is suddenly gone.
It was tearing him up that, you know, he had this beautiful home office in Phoenix, but now this home office had turned into I'm living here in Scottsdale in this little condo thing, and, you know, it pretty much that was a train wreck.
At least Sherry and Dwight are able to enjoy their family after their daughter Jennifer gives birth to her first child, Cody.
They were kind of stepping into some new roles as grandparents, and so they're having a little fun with that, which was good. Gave them a little bright spot from all this craziness that was happening with them.
Dwight tries to repair some of his business accounts by selling his home.
At one time, he thought he could get $1 million out of the house. At one time, he probably could have.
He was trying to save a little bit of everything, I think. I think he was trying to just kind of get things in a spot where he could control them.
Sherry and Dwight have been together for a very long time. They came together with shared values. They have kids together. So it makes total sense to me that they're still trying to make it work. They've overcome things before in the past, and they're going to do what they can to overcome things today.
At some level, Dwight probably feels at this point at least complicit, if not responsible for, some of the choices that Sherry's made. And so he may feel that it's unfair to lay the blame entirely upon her at this point.
I have told you everything.
As it turns out, Sherry has not only run the business into the ground, she's also committed fraud. And in early 2009, the FBI opens an investigation into Tobin and Company.
And as he dug in more and more and more, it just escalated, and it just seemed like it steamrolled, and it was out of control faster than you can imagine.
Some of the banks just filed civil suits to start the ball rolling. And he actually negotiated his way out of those and paid something back. But this one that turned into such a huge deal, there was no negotiation over that because it was federal offense at that point.
Dwight and Sherry's relationship plummets into a dark chasm.
Given what's happened to the company...
9 months after discovering what his wife has done, Dwight decides it's no longer worth holding on to the fragments of their broken marriage. On November 5th, 2009, he tells his daughter Jennifer that he's getting a divorce.
He had been working with his own attorney, but he said they advised him that he needed to divorce her so he wouldn't get blamed for her bank fraud.
It was very hard for him to tell anyone, for that matter, because he knew his social status was going to change and his lifestyle, but he felt like people were going to judge him or whatever. It was very hard for him to come to grips with that.
They have lost everything. As a couple, they're not together anymore. They don't have finances, they don't have success, and they're coming into the golden years. It's a time where you're supposed to be able to relax and enjoy life, and these two are trying to scramble to rebuild something that is gone.
Well, at this point in Dwight and Sherry's marriage, it seems to me like their kids are really the only thing of lasting value that they've created. The financial success was fleeting and it's gone. Whatever kind of trust they would have had with each other is gone.
Bryce Tobin offers his brother Dwight, now broke and destitute, a place to live.
I said he could stay with me. We've got a big house and room for his own office and all that. And I could give him $10,000 or more for his pickup so he could pay off that banknote, and it'd be a way to start over.
Dwight packs up and prepares to make the move to Oklahoma.
Day before Thanksgiving, he was going to pick up a trailer and load up the things he wanted to bring and probably arrive in Oklahoma on Thanksgiving Day.
Dwight never arrives. Instead, he sends a text.
We stayed around on Thanksgiving because we thought he'd be there. It wasn't until Friday I get a text message that said, change the plans, I got the flu. It'll be a few days, or talk to you in a few days. Then the next message I got, which was a few days later, said, I've gone to Mexico. Cell phone won't be in contact much because cell phone service isn't very good. Please don't tell anyone. I do remember those words.
The rest of the family is also informed. Jennifer assumes that her father just needs some time to work things out.
It made sense because of the stress from the money, the relationship itself needing a break. You know, they needed to get away from each other.
They knew he was devastated by getting divorced from their mom. It's a new situation that they hadn't seen him in before. And so they may have not really known for a while what to make of his behavior. They may not have known what would be a normal pattern of interacting with them during this difficult time in his life.
His son-in-law, Kurt, is concerned that he's trying to get away from his daunting financial difficulties and escape the federal investigation.
One of the things was discussed was the fact that if things got crazy, his attorney would advise him that maybe he should go down south below the border, just to kind of let things die down. I thought he went down to Mexico to relieve some of the pressures that he was under.
Bryce worries that his brother may be getting himself into even deeper trouble.
Maybe Dwight had borrowed some money from some of the wrong people, and they were trying to collect, and he was going to try to disappear for a while. But I know he was very desperate, so that anything's possible when people get desperate enough.
Jennifer also worries about her mother, who's not only been hit by her husband's departure, but is also facing a federal investigation. She's no longer responding to calls.
Mom, I've called you a million times. Call me back.
We also were dealing with Mom. So we were wondering where Dad was, but then Mom was, you know, where's Mom? And trying to get a hold of her.
Where have you been?
2 weeks after Thanksgiving, Sherry resurfaces at Jennifer's doorstep. She's fallen to pieces.
She walked through the door. She handed me $300, had her dog in one hand, had a bag, a trash bag in another hand, and said, this is all I have left. I peeked outside to shut the door, and her car was dirty, and it looked like she'd been living out of her car, truly. And I'm like, what are you gonna do? It's December 22nd, Christmas is 3 days away, the New Year's coming. You know, you can't put a family member on the street.
As a parent, you feel like you're supposed to be the supporter and the provider for your children. And so for Sherry to be at a point where she's living in her car and then ultimately having to move in with the daughter who she's supposed to be helping support could make a person really feel inadequate and sad and angry.
Sherry's unusually territorial of the few things she has left.
Because she had a garbage bag that was, you know, upstairs that she held things in, and she was very, you know, don't come in, this is my room.
I traded cars with her one day, and that, like, flipped her out.
The family tries to be as understanding as possible when Dwight fails to show up for Christmas. It's especially hard on Sherry.
I got a text message from him that said, hey, don't worry about me for the holidays. I'll catch up with you after the first of the year. Just point blank like that. I was like, well, maybe he just truly needs a break. And then maybe it's my time to pitch in and deal with her.
And she does take care of her mother for months without any additional word from her dad. During this time, Sherry's behavior is becoming increasingly bizarre. In February, a disturbing incident puts Jennifer on edge.
Why would I do something like that?
My dad gave me a little bank for Cody. It probably had 50, 60 bucks in it, just off change. It was sitting in my windowsill, and I went to pull it down, it was empty. So I went to ask her about it, and she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I wouldn't take money from my own grandson. What are you talking about? So then she comes back, like, you know, a couple hours later with this huge bag of, like, pennies and quarters and that, slams it on my counter. Here's your money back for your son.
Sherry is not coping well with her husband's prolonged absence.
Drinking more than I've ever seen my mom drink in my life, ever. Like, you know, bottles every, you know, vodka to wine to whatever.
3 months after Sherry moves in, Kurt and Jennifer, who's pregnant with her second child, can no longer tolerate her behavior.
I escorted her to the door. She went out the door. I went to go shut the door. She put her foot in the door and said that her little lap dog was there. And she said, I needed my dog. And I opened the door and I said, you go ahead, grab your dog and then get out of here because you're not welcome here anymore.
The months pass. There's still no phone call from Dwight. He even fails to show up after Jennifer gives birth to her second child.
I wanted to call and say what's going on, and I couldn't get a hold of him, and I didn't know, and his phone was acting funny at that point. And I remember calling my grandma and telling her
there was something in her voice that said, there's something wrong with your dad. There's something wrong.
As the family becomes panic-stricken, the police discover that this turbulent marriage did not come to an amicable end.
Some of these body parts were very forcefully removed, not just a clean cut with a saw.
Jennifer Carmichael's father has been missing for 2 years after her parents' marriage ends in financial disaster. Desperate to locate him, she files a missing persons report.
After reading the initial report and after speaking to Jennifer, I thought, you know what, maybe he was a little bit more involved in this whole federal investigation than he wanted his kids to even know about. And so maybe he's in jail somewhere. Maybe he is doing his time, and he just was too proud to tell his kids.
Then, just 2 weeks later, police discovered Dwight's truck abandoned at an apartment complex in Phoenix.
It was apparent that truck had been there a long time and had not been moved. Dust on the windshield and on the vehicle.
They started questioning family, they started questioning everything. The world was already spinning. I just thought, oh my God, like, what is going on? You know, what happened?
Investigators search for witnesses who can shed light on Dwight's disappearance.
One of those interviews included going back to the house that Sherry and Dwight were living in when he went missing in November of 2009. And we went and met with the homeowner there. And one of the things she told us was that the carpeting in the master bedroom had been replaced. So I remember thinking, okay, can this really be happening?
When the owner had moved back into her condo after Sherry and Dwight had ended their lease, the garage had smelt like bleach.
The only person who had access to the rental before Dwight's disappearance was Sherry. She's now living in a rental just down the street from Jennifer. Police begin to watch the 53-year-old grandmother like a hawk. There is nothing much to observe other than Sherry going about her business. But after a week of observation, police notice something unusual.
All of a sudden, they observe Sherry come out of the house with a garbage bag, and she puts something in her trunk, and she gets back into her car, and she takes off, and she leaves. So we're listening to this over the radio, and it was kind of odd, like, where is she going now?
And she proceeds to drive from the west side of the valley all the way out to the South Chandler area and disposes of the bag in a dumpster.
At this point, it's roughly around 7 o'clock at night. So the surveillance officer jumps into the dumpster and opens up the bag, and there's a towel and some other clothing. So the surveillance officer unravels the clothing and sees now a weapon, gun, handgun.
In your dumpster.
Investigators immediately bring Sherry in for questioning. By all appearances, she seems like a timid and confused grandmother.
So I was depressed.
But when Sherry explains the gun to police, she makes a surprising confession.
I bought the gun because I wanted to commit suicide.
They were in the bedroom, and she came in with the gun. She was going to kill herself, and he tried to grab it out of her hands. The gun accidentally went off, and grazed him in the arm. She said he wrapped up his arm and then left in his truck, and that was the last time she saw him.
After a grueling 10 hours of interrogation, with each retelling, her story changes. Finally, Sherry admits that her husband was fatally shot in the struggle.
She gave four different versions of how that happened, but she admitted to accidentally shooting him and then abandoning his body in the desert.
Sherry also admits to communicating with the family, pretending to be Dwight, to make it seem as though he was still alive.
She'd sent text messages, emails, messages. I even think she may have been messing with his Facebook.
And the reason, says Sherry, for keeping up the charade is that she was worried no one would believe her story. So she kept her husband's body in the freezer for a month before finally disposing of it.
She wrapped the body up and drug it out to the garage and then later disposed of it in the desert, is what she told us that day.
She also makes a reference to cleaning up the blood after Dwight was shot.
She made weird comments to us, it's not clean unless it's bleach clean.
And I remember after that interview on the 14th, we took her out to the desert. She was going to show us where she dumped the body.
She made weird comments. You know, if we did find the body, do you think the animals or the coyotes would have done anything to the body? At the time, it was an odd statement. Like, what does she mean by that? We drove her out to the location and we searched around there. We couldn't find anything because it wasn't there.
Even without a body, investigators arrest Sherry for the death of her husband on the charge of first-degree murder. The family is stunned by Sherry's confession.
My first reaction was, you know, disbelief. It was more of like, please don't let this be happening.
First, it was like, are you talking about my mom? Seriously? Like, you know, the gal that doesn't like to, you know, pick up dog poop.
It was a whirlwind of emotions. It was an anger that I couldn't describe. I was angry with my mother. Because how could she do this? How could she do this to her family that they had built together?
The cops are not convinced that the shooting was an accident. But in order to prove their suspicions, they need to locate Dwight's body. And before long, they find what they're looking for. The results are beyond disturbing. Several nearby counties have reported body parts appearing at the side of the road over the Christmas holidays, discovered by people stopping for a rest break.
A left leg was recovered out in Pinal County. A couple days later, in the north part of Maricopa County, north of Phoenix, the right leg was discovered. About 100 miles west of Phoenix, a complete torso was recovered. So, and I said, well, what, can you give me a little description as to the race, the height, the weight? And I'm listening to him tell me this, and that's the exact description of Dwight Tobine.
Detective Hugh Lockerbie is able to confirm the match with a DNA swab from Dwight's parents. How can Sherry possibly explain her husband's dismembered body? Police conclude that she murdered her husband in cold blood and brutally disposed of his remains in an attempt to conceal his identity.
She did, you know, take a lot of effort to disguise and, you know, get rid of the head, hands, and feet, which we've never been able to recover. The person who did this was obviously very motivated, making sure that this person was completely unidentifiable. Some of these body parts were basically very forcefully removed, not just a clean cut with a saw, not a sight that a lot of people want to look at.
Multiple methods were used. Different parts had different marks on them. They told us that they believed a reciprocating blade type of saw was used on some parts.
I was sickened. I was just like, you've just taken what you think is the worst and you've made it worse. You've made it unconscionable.
It is a rare occasion that you would find a woman, albeit an older woman, that would murder someone and then dismember them in such a graphic and horrific fashion. However, there are a lot of sociopaths that literally lie dormant. As long as they're getting what they need and they're being fed in the way that they want to be fed, everything's fine.
The fact that Sherry's a grandma at this point is actually illustrative of the fact that you cannot just spot a sociopath. There's nothing about being a grandma, there's nothing about being older that makes those sociopathic traits go out of a person.
As Sherry would not benefit financially through Dwight's death, investigators believe the only reason she killed him is because she couldn't face a divorce.
I think that was probably one of the main triggers, was the fear of being alone, the fear of having to support herself, the loss of reputation, how it would be looked at by her family members.
You know, she stuck, you know, with him through the worst of the worst. She just didn't know why he would leave her.
She's put into a situation where her husband divorces her. She has absolutely no money, and she wants him to pay for that. She wants him to suffer, and the way she's going to make him suffer is by killing him.
After the discovery of Dwight's dismembered body, prosecutors have a strong case against Sherry. The charge? First-degree murder. Jennifer feels deeply betrayed by her mother.
She was used me and my garbage cans and my life, and was using my home to finish her cleanup. I wonder what she did throw away. Wonder if she threw remains in my garbage. You know, all of these questions play into my head.
You always hear the jokes, okay, yeah, your mother-in-law's living with you or this or that. Well, you know, that's all fun and games, but when you look at this type of scenario, that, I mean, of course, hindsight's 20/20, but I allowed a very bad thing into my home.
Jennifer Carmichael does not understand how the grandmother to her children was capable of such a heinous act.
You know, I had this vision of she was just a sweetheart, like, and cared about people. You know, there was people that had cancer, and she took them food and, you know, helped them with their treatments. But I'm just shocked, like, completely shocked that how can, you know, this, what I thought, be so different.
One of the things that we know about sociopaths is they literally have the ability to split their emotions. And so It could be that Sherry would butcher her husband and scatter him around the country, and also try to be doting and loving to her children by sending these text messages from their supposedly still alive father so that they can feel comfort and peace as they go about each and every day.
I'll bet you if you went to the prison and interviewed Sherry, she would tell you that that is the reason why she sent them the text messages over those months. It was just to make her children think that he was still alive and that there was still an ongoing relationship with their dad. It was some kind of altruistic thing. That is the essence of the sociopath.
Sherry pleads guilty to avoid the possibility of being sentenced to death at trial. On May 19th, 2012, Sherry Tobin is sentenced to life in prison, plus 31 additional years for fraud-related charges.
She pled and sentenced all on the same day, which was a bit rare, but she agreed to plead guilty to first-degree murder. They felt that that was the best course of action, and she didn't want the death penalty.
Most of Dwight's remains are still missing.
I think that's probably the thing that bothers me the most, is not being able to give closure to the family.
The death has torn the Tobin siblings apart. They now only speak to each other through a lawyer.
It's made it very hard. Between the three of us, I think we're all deeply hurt on some level. We're all in a different place with our grief.
The family is still grappling with the horrific loss.
Every day you think about it, I relive that. You know, I relive the fact of when my wife heard the news. It's bad.
I think the hardest thing was what it did to my dad. He didn't live long enough to see her punished. He was denied that opportunity to have contact with his son for the rest of his life.
I feel like he's doing God's work now, and that's important, that's huge. Even though I miss him so much.